He is the new voice of talk radio, Alexander Danilov.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me on this Friday night. There's so much going on in the world. Of course, the tragic events of what happened yesterday in Nice, France. And just not enough words there. And we did a little bit of a tribute yesterday. Of course, there's no words to be able to describe the what's really going on around the world, but we do our best. And tonight we have a bit of a coup going on in Turkey, or an attempted coup going on in Turkey. So with all that, our best attempt and my best attempt at what I can do tonight on Solutionsology Radio is to provide a little bit of a distraction, a little bit of insight into something else that might help you as the days go forward. And I know we can't solve every problem in the world right now, but what we can do is talk about solutions and talk about different things that are more positive. And to do that, I have a wonderful and legendary guest on tonight. That's Terry Jones. He is the founder of Travelocity and the founding chairman of Kayak. He's, of course, in between that and flanked by that experience, he's done a ton of other things, including writing a book, which we'll talk about as well. So, Terry, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So again, we have all these all this different turmoil going on in the world, and I don't want to make the show too much about that, although it's very important, because what that does is present, if nothing else, an opportunity to fix things and make things right. There's unrest, and that means that people are unhappy, and with that comes a mind that you need to bring into the fold to be able to find a solution to that. You've done that throughout your career in the travel world, which has been so maligned, so poorly regarded by travelers, by other businesses, frequent bankruptcies and things like that. Yet, here you are. You've created some of the best companies, the most well-known companies in the space, helping people get to the travel needs that they're looking for at a lower cost. And now you're doing it also with Wayblazer. So please talk about your initial days in the airline industry, how much all the years you spent with American, and everything that you've able to do there, and how it brought you here today.
Well, you know, I started my career as a travel agent. I started as a receptionist in a travel agency 45 years ago. And after about 5 years, well, then I moved. We did a startup. Two of us did a travel startup for 5 years, so that was my first startup. I was 21. That was pretty successful. But after 5 years, I got interested in computing and jumped to a computer company that was selling computers to travel agents. And 6 months in, that company was sold to American Airlines. So suddenly I'm at a big company, and I worked my way up in the marketing organization, later in the IT organization, all the way to CIO. So I was chief information officer at American Airlines Sabre, which was the computer division. And while I was doing that, we took a product that we'd had for many years. I'd worked on it earlier. It was one of the very first online travel products. It was on AOL and CompuServe and Prodigy. Some of your listeners hopefully go back that far. And I thought that was going to be really big. And I said to my boss, you know, can I take that over? And it coincided with the fact that Sabre was a company that automated travel agents. And we were the people who put the computers in all the travel agencies. But we also thought this consumer thing would be big. So we'd been running a consumer experiment for 6 or 7 years. And finally the travel agents woke up and they wanted us to kill it. And our CEO said, no, we're not going to do that. Why don't we give it to Terry? He's over in IT. We'll kind of hide it over there. He used to be a travel agent. Maybe he can do something with it. Mm-hmm. Well, we turned that into Travelocity.com. I left my job as CIO and went to do that. So my background as a travel agent in the marketing department of American Airlines, in the IT department of American Airlines, was a pretty good advanced MBA in how to run a travel startup.
Yeah, so with being in a startup, obviously, and creating a startup, not just being one of the founding members or one of the initial team members, but being the integral part of the founding, there's so much responsibility that goes with that. And again, an industry that doesn't really have too many startups, and at least not a lot of people looking at it as something that can be disrupted today, or it's even worth to disrupt. But of course, you guys did that, and you created a team, you assembled a team, people that you know and you trust and you work alongside with. Now, there's a lot of challenges that were presented with that, so let's go through some of those and how you were able to persevere that and create a Travelocity travel site which had a lot of competitors. Obviously, there's been a lot of consolidation since it's been taken private. You're no longer there, but for it to be for it to have gone private, a lot had to have happened for that, and it's not easy in that space. So take us through that, all those challenges that you face, or at least the Reader's Digest version.
Okay, well, Travelocity was one of the very first online travel agencies, and very successful, grew like a weed. It actually almost was a joint venture between Microsoft and American Airlines. We were talking with Microsoft. They wanted to do the front end. We wanted to do the back end, but we could never really bring that to agreement. So we went out on our own, and this was really entrepreneurship because we were doing this inside American Airlines. That's a little different than a startup. We didn't have to worry about money, but we really had to worry more about how slow a big corporation is, how many people didn't necessarily want us to succeed. They wanted to do other things with that money. So I moved out of the building so we could build our own culture. We built our own IT organization. We basically cut off from the finance organization. We eventually got all the people to think they were part of Travelocity rather than part of the departments they were previously with. It's hard to do something inside a large corporation. You have a lot of benefits. You have a big name. It's easy to get money, but you also are inside of an older, stodgy organization. And then, of course, Microsoft launched Expedia, so we immediately had some big competition. We led for a very long time, but we were very worried about them because they had the power of Microsoft behind them. So we went out and did big partnership deals with AOL and Yahoo and Netscape to gain more traffic. Eventually, we took the company public. Not really for money so much, just to gain more partnerships. And it went public for $1.2 billion. So quite successful public offering. It was a great, great experience to run that company.
And then years later, a lot else has changed for you. You ended up becoming a founding chairman of Kayak.com, which eventually got sold to Priceline, and Priceline, pretty much the largest player in the space, I think even market cap wise today, although I should verify that, competing with the likes of Expedia and all that. Now, Priceline, I see, is a little bit of a different company. Outside the lines, as I like to say, and they're very forward-thinking, Terry. And they actually acquired a company that a lot of people didn't think they would acquire, and that's OpenTable. Now, as yourself, obviously, you're very forward-thinking as well, very progressive in your business mindset, and you wrote a whole book on innovation. You've lived through it. So I'd like to hear what your take is on, people about, the Pokemon Go craze, and not so much the Pokemon Go craze, but the idea and the technology and the potential of augmented reality. Does it have a place in the travel world? And sure, VR has a place in the travel world. Obviously, there's more we'll talk about soon, but I want to hear what your thoughts are on augmented reality and that impact, potential impact on travel.
I think so very much. I mean, it's something we've been talking about in travel for many, many years. I think the next battle in travel is what I call the battle for the edge. It's the battle for the edge of the glass. It's who's going to own your trip from the very beginning when you book all the way through when you come home. Today you use 10 different tools, and these tools are battling to become the one tool you use. Why did Priceline buy OpenTable? Because they know that travelers go to restaurants a lot, and it's a complementary product. So people are looking for these complementary products, and I think augmented reality, where you can, learn about where you are and learn about, you read about people. I haven't used the product yet, the Pokemon Go thing, but people are talking about, well, I'm discovering things in my own town. I'm finding out about the history of the church. I'm finding out about the history of this park. It seems like a natural to be embedded in travel applications and for people who are traveling to use. It makes a lot of sense to me.
I agree. And once again, I'm speaking with Terry Jones. He's the founder of Travelocity.com, founding chairman of Kayak, and, of course, a lot of stuff in between and outside of that as well, which we've mentioned already and we'll continue talking about. I love that you're embracing and accepting of it, because so many people don't understand that when people are gravitating towards something, and it's not something that's negative, it's not hurting people, although a lot of people are making that case because, you know, when something happens, if somebody walks into a building or whatever because they're staring at their phone looking at it, that's not the problem of the technology. That's the problem of the person not being able to understand it and use it correctly. And that happens, that will happen, but also because it's new. But you're embracing that technology. And in the past, and of course in your industry as well, there's been a lot of hesitation, apprehension towards new technology because it's going to disrupt internally. It might disrupt profitability. It might disrupt how people get to things. It might disrupt the any kind of model or processes and things like that. So I'd like to get your take on your embrace of technology and not so much a reversion to it as it's so prevalent in so many big spaces.
Well, you know, people forget when they talk about disruption that disruption and innovation are two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a disruption because you didn't do it. It was done to you. So I prefer to look at innovation. And if you aren't open to new ideas, if you aren't embracing change, then in today's world, you're simply left behind. You know, I'm 68 years old, so I had a review of one of my speeches the other day when I was talking about innovation and change and my new company, Wayblazer, and the comment from one of my viewers was, "Well, it's exciting that somebody as old as you is still innovating." And I was a little hurt, but then I said, "Okay, well that's all right."
A bit of a backhanded compliment.
You know, I am older, and you know, many times as people age, they want to hold on to the past and they're afraid of the future, and I'm just not that way at all. I'm still excited, but that's why we started our new company, Wayblazer. You know, I don't have to start a new company at this stage of my life, but the chairman of IBM called and said, you know, could you help us deploy IBM Watson into travel? And IBM Watson, as you know, the computer that won Jeopardy.
Yes, sir.
And I said, wow, what an exciting thing to try and do. And so that's what we're doing. We're taking this new cognitive artificial intelligence technology, and we're deploying it in travel. I'm off to China next week to meet a lot of Chinese travel companies to show them what we built. And it's exciting and fun. So I think, you know, the world has always been changing fast, but it's changing even faster today. And we have to embrace it or we get left behind.
Now, Wayblazer is, again, a forward-thinking company. It's technology-based, but it's also obviously solutions-based. You're not trying to keep a problem there and just create, you know, I can fix it for now, and then, you know, how a lot of consulting companies do, and they never really fix anything. You're trying to move things forward, and I like that, obviously, and take it in the name. I was actually looking at jobs at Wayblazer, and it's not an easy company to get into because nobody's leaving your company. There's obviously... There's a big need.
It's small and just starting. So, yeah, hopefully people aren't leaving. They're coming. I think we only have about 20 people. But it's exciting. You know, we solved the travel booking problem with Travelocity and then with Kayak. But we haven't solved travel planning. If anything, travel planning has gotten harder. You know, people now, they used to talk to me when I was a travel agent. I'd plan their trip to Europe in an hour. And now they spend 3 months online. And they're unhappy, you know, because they didn't read everything. So we're taking all kinds of unstructured data and structured data, putting it together and allowing you to use natural language search. So you can say, I want to go to an island in February with my wife and two kids, needs to have golf, spa, and kids activities. And we actually give you an answer. That's not an answer you can get from a search engine. But we've built this technology in a way that we're hoping over time we can get the web, instead of giving you clues, to actually give you advice. That's our goal.
Yeah, and that's very important. I think that's the way the web is going, too. It's more, and you know, we kind of laugh at Ask Jeeves at this point. It's become a little bit of a joke and even some cartoons. But, you know, that's the idea, is to create an answer. Now, people are like, well, I'm not going to talk into my phone and do it. I'll just search it. You know, they think it's crazy, it's stupid, you know. But when you have it on your watch and you can do it, and for me, people get impressed when I have an Android phone. People get impressed when I go say, okay, Google, and I ask a question, and Google reads it back to us. Everyone, it's like watching TV for the first time. The eyes and the looks that you get is amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
These are the same people, Terry, that are saying that that's stupid. That's because people are not understanding and appreciative of technology that we have. So let's talk about that for a little bit now. And let's talk about innovation, because it's, again, we use that word disruption a lot, and TechCrunch kind of has their conference and their event of disruption conference and like that. It's a great thing, but it does impact a lot of people, and that's why a lot of people sour on it. They lose jobs, industries get cut out, or industries get changed forever. We talk about autonomous technology now with cars, robots, factories. Amazon Ground Floor is like is an autonomous dream or nightmare, depending on how you look at it. So how you look at it is always a thing. So I want to see how what you would say to somebody that looks at innovation as more something we need to curtail today, as opposed to something that we should keep moving forward on, keep crushing.
Well, I don't think you can curtail it. I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle. Man has always strived to better himself and better the world, and that's not going to change. I made a speech some years ago to an organization of real estate brokers, and after I got done, one of the questions is the guy said, "Well, do you think we could just take all the listings off the internet and go back to the way it was?" I said, "No, you know, I really don't think that's going to happen." So it is unfortunate when people are displaced by change. And, you know, I think, you know, people ask the role of the government, and I'm not one to have huge government, but I think retraining is very important for people because industries do change. But some companies manage to figure their way through. I made a speech recently to a company called Hartford Steam Boiler. They're a 160-year-old insurance company who started out insuring boilers from blowing up after the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to doing that, they're doing cyber insurance, and they're investing in the Internet of Things. Yeah, so this is a company who just isn't sitting back. If all they did was boilers, they wouldn't have enough to do. But they looked at the future and said, "Hey, insurance is insurance. Internet of Things, these things on the Internet are going to break. They're going to need to be insured. They're going to need to be inspected. We can do that." So I think you have to be open to looking at the opportunity and saying, how can we do that? Established organizations many times view disruption as a threat instead of saying, that's an opportunity for us. Right? You remember Kodak invented the digital camera. They never brought it to market. And the day Kodak went bankrupt, Instagram raised $1 billion. So, you know, could they have changed? Well, it's not easy, but they didn't really try. So I think you have to embrace change, and it's going to happen with you or without you.
Agree. Now, I'm speaking with Terry Jones. He is the founder of Travelocity.com, founding chairman of Kayak.com, and the author of On Innovation. Now, Terry, I had Jim McCabe on last night, the VP and GM of Success Magazine. I had John Addison on not that long ago, and I asked him questions about success, and Success Magazine's obviously that's the core of it, that's the crux of what they talk about, but everybody has a different definition of success, whether it's being the best chef or whatever it is, being a great parent, being a great friend, and raising the kids or whatever it might be. Everyone has their own definition of it, and I think that makes it really special. So you've obviously been very successful in a lot of different contexts, from a personal world, that's your world. But from what people see, you've obviously been very successful, and you've led a great life, and you've done a lot of great things, and you've employed a lot of people as a result, and you've given a lot of other people their definition of success. You started Wayblazer. You have a CEO of Wayblazer. You're not micromanaging that. You gave someone the opportunity to run that and create something big, and it will be big. So I'd like to get your definition of success today, what you remember it being years ago, and what you believe it will be in about 5 to 10 years from now.
Well, I mean, sure, years ago, obviously I was climbing the ladder. I wanted to be successful. I wanted to take care of my family. But I also wanted to do something that really engaged me and was exciting and interesting and was involved in change because, you know, I started this travel company at 21, and then I jumped into computing, you know, and then I jumped into the Internet. And, you know, when things got kind of tired, I had to change. So success for me, I think, is being successful, but doing it in a bunch of different ways so that I'm constantly learning and constantly changing. Today, for me, success is helping other people. So, you know, I give 50 speeches a year on innovation. I've written a book on innovation. I'm writing a book on disruption. I consult. I've been on 13 different boards. You know, I'm on charitable boards. All of that is about, you know, spreading the word about innovation and hopefully getting people to understand, you know, don't be disrupted, be the innovator. And using what I've learned and, you know, what other people helped me to learn and passing that on. That, to me, is my definition of success now. And, you know, for as long as I'm around, that's what I want to do, is to help other people deal with this world of very, very fast change.
Excellent. Now, let's talk about your book on innovation. Now, you've done so many crazy things already in your life. To write a book, and it's not easy, although I just wrote my first book, and I'll be working on a couple of people on it, including possibly Jeff Hoffman, who I know pretty well from the industry.
Yeah, I do.
Great guy, obviously, and just like you, is looking to do things differently and looking to help people and raise them up and do things like that and give back. And your book, obviously, on innovation. Let's talk about that. You mentioned some of the other stuff you're working on literary-wise.
Yeah, it's a very unusual book because it's 72 three-page chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to write a book, a business book that people actually finish. Only 10% of business books are read cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, you know, have a great beginning and a great ending and a lot of hamburger helper in the middle. So I tried to make it, you know, 73 things you can actually read in 5 minutes and do, put to work. If it's about culture, if it's about team, if it's about idea generation, idea selection, implementation, whatever the topic is, you can open the book and read that part when you need it. And a lot of people use it more like a reference book. You know, I need to, my team is failing, I need to read more about team, and it's right there. So it was fun to write. I've had a lot of fun with it, and now I've got this new speech that I'm giving on disruption, and I decided to write a book about that. And
uh-huh.
I'm actually thinking of doing something crazy. I'm going to print it upside down on the back of my current book. So you'll get two books in one. Is turn it over, read about disruption, turn it over, read about innovation, because
it's a great
they
idea.
Are two sides of the same coin. So uh-huh. I had to find a publisher who would print an upside down book, but now I've found one. And I'm going to be working on that this summer, hopefully have it out in the fall. But On Innovation isn't great. It's on Amazon. And, you know, it's also it's self-published. I really didn't need a publisher. I've got my own platform. People know me. And it's printed on demand. So when you order the book is printed. So there's no inventory. I think it's just an unbelievable model. Keeps the cost low. I don't have to have a warehouse full of books. You press the button on Amazon, they print the book and send it to you. Or, of course, you can buy an e-copy, you know, Kindle copy. So publishing is an industry that needs to continue to change, but those of us in the self-publishing side of it are, I think, pushing that change pretty hard.
Absolutely. Terry, great conversation. I'd love to have you on again. You're doing so many different things. I'd love to be able to promote that and obviously tell my audience about that as it comes, including speeches that you're doing, where they can listen to it. They can follow you on Twitter. They can just go to your site and get all the links from there, which I believe I have definitely have listed on my page on solutionsology.com. But
yeah, it's tbjones.com. So if they want to go to tbjones.com, they can watch a lot of videos. They can see me speaking, learn more, and you know, I hope they find it helpful. And I really appreciate you having me on tonight. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Terry. Appreciate it, and best of luck with everything. I'll be having you on again soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Good night.
Appreciate it. Thank you.